That's the one that Caleb wants. So why don't you stand right here, Caleb? Okay. Caleb said we could do this presentation together. And this is Caleb Lott's global Wycliffe presentation. And wherever else he does this in the world, it happened first at Bethel. Can you see that thing okay?
Yeah.
Okay, give us the next slide, Jared.
All right, if you notice, there are only 531 complete Bibles. And
languages, huh?
In certain different languages. The New Testament has over twice that, and then the people with just portions are nearly twice that. So if you really look at that, we are very lucky to have the full Bible in our own language.
And the interesting thing about the English language is that there are something like over 200 translations and paraphrases of the New Testament in English alone. So just take a look at those numbers to make sure you've got it, because there's one other interesting feature about this. How many languages are in the world? Anybody know? Anybody count them up lately? 6,800. Yeah, 6,900. Good for you, Dave. And although this graphic shows that there are almost 3,000 languages that have part of the Bible in them, there are tons of other language projects on the go. Some estimates are up to 2,000 or maybe even more than 2,000 other languages where the Bible is being translated. And people say, well, then why wouldn't there at least be one book of the Bible in those languages? But what happens is that people from Wycliffe and other translation agencies often have to go in to languages that have never been written down. So they first have to learn the language, then reduce it to writing, then teach the people how to read and write at the same time as they're translating the scripture. So sometimes we can simplistically think that it's a pretty straightforward process, but often there are several steps as they go through that. Caleb was telling me that. Slide number two. What do we got here, Caleb?
Well, if you look at Africa and Asia, they're by far the most languages that don't have the Bible in them.
So this graphic is showing us languages that don't yet have the Bible, or any part of it.
But the Pacific is still not far behind that, and I'm guessing that most of those languages are in Papua New Guinea, because there is over 800 languages in that small area.
Give them the mic, Randy.
Sorry, why don't you say that one more time?
The Pacific isn't far behind Africa and Asia there, and I'm guessing that most of the Pacific languages that need to be translated are in Papua New Guinea.
And so the languages that are displayed on the screen here, languages that don't yet have any part of the scripture, total about 180 million people in the world. Now, here's a little bit of extra something that Caleb was telling me about, or someone was. Did you know that there are more languages in North America than in Europe? Who would have thought that, right? In Europe, almost every country seems to have its own language. But here's an interesting feature about North America. All of these First Nations groups, not all, most of them have their own language. And whereas most people who speak those First Nations languages, like here in Canada, also speak English or French, there's a small group of those people, generally fairly aged people, who only speak that language. So one of the issues in terms of counting up the number of languages is that when this generation of First Nation people in Canada and the States and in South America die off, those languages may be lost or retained by people who speak them only as a second language, nobody speaking them as their primary language. So part of the issue with Bible translation is to wrestle with which languages should we invest all of the time and effort in translating the scriptures into. In 50 years, if the language is gone, is it still worth doing it? It may well be. But organizations like Wycliffe are trying to deploy their resources according to where they will get the strongest return on that heavy, heavy translation investment. Did I get that right? Good. Oh, let's show your shirt. So this shirt that Caleb's got on is significant because it was purchased in PNG
And it's the Papua New Guinea.
Oh,
Guinean. And it's the Papua New Guinean flag.
So what do we got up here?
This is the bird of paradise, and this is the Southern Cross. Very significant symbols in PNG.
Thank you, Caleb. Jeremy and Tanya. Jeremy and Tanya, please.
So, just checking the mic out first. Is this one?
I'm just going to introduce a video that we had made in Papua New Guinea, and it just kind of shows well the work that we did there. But at the end, it's for if we go to a church and we only have a short time. It's kind of a generic video, so I apologize for the ending. But anyhow, I talked to Randy and he said, show it. So this is endorsed by Randy.
Hello, my name is Jeremy Lott. This is my wife, Tanya. We also have four boys, Caleb, Daniel, Seth, and Stephen. We came to Ukurumpa, Papua New Guinea in 2012, where we serve with Wycliffe Bible Translators. We have experienced God speaking to us personally through His Word, the Bible. Without God, without His Word, we would be lost.
We came to Papua New Guinea because we felt the Lord calling us here. In Papua New Guinea, there are over 800 different language groups, and of these, more than 280 of them don't have a single word of Scripture in their own language.
My role in supporting Bible translation is through automotive repair and vehicle maintenance. I work alongside a team of Papua New Guineans, helping them grow their skills as auto mechanics while maintaining a large fleet of vehicles. Ukurumpa is a mission center where around 400 missionaries are based. I work on translators' vehicles, a clinic ambulance, supply trucks, and even our fire truck. If any of these do break down though, we come and tow them back to our auto shop. All this keeps the momentum of language development and Bible translation going. On weekends, I have enjoyed going to remote villages in the Agarabi language region to show the Jesus film and an AIDS video. Afterwards, I help to distribute Agarabi Bibles and audio Bible players. Doing this shares the gospel and helps to get God's word into the hands of the people to start to make a difference in their lives and communities.
My main job here has been to be the mother to our four boys and to keep our home running smoothly. But I've also worked as the daycare manager. The daycare provides a place for preschool children when their parents need to get some work done or to allow them freedom to do other things. As the manager, I oversee two hardworking Papua New Guinean women who care for and teach the children. I also manage the finances and the facility. By doing my job, I enable parents to continue their part in the work of Bible translation by providing a safe, fun, and educational place for their young children. Our children go to the international school here. The teachers are missionaries who come to give our kids a quality education. The boys enjoy the school and the extracurricular activities, such as the music and sports. In their free time, they really enjoy spending time with their friends. A unique bunch from Papua New Guinea as well as from countries all over the world. The boys love it here.
We love the work we do here, but we cannot do it alone. We're so thankful for people who pray for us and partner with us financially. It's an essential part of the ministry, And to continue on working here in Papua New Guinea, we need a team.
Have you ever considered that from your own home, you can make a difference in the lives of people on the other side of the world? Through regular partnership, you could be involved in helping the people of Papua New Guinea come to know God through His Word. We invite you to join our team and make a difference for eternity.
Someone, we're just gonna kind of do a slideshow, just with pictures, because everyone loves pictures. So if someone can turn out these lights, that will help us to describe some of our time in PNG. Fine.
I have one of those things hanging on me. So, I didn't know a whole lot about Papua New Guinea actually before we went here. We heard some from Miriam and Emerson. They were working about 2 hours away from where we live in Ukarumpa. But as you can see, just to reorient our minds as to where Papua New Guinea is, it's just above Australia there, if you look there. So.
Okay, you can go to the next slide. So we started our time in Papua New Guinea doing a course, which is wonderful because the idea of being plunked into a foreign country and like, there, now live, would be kind of intimidating. So they have a 3.5-month course that trains Wycliffe missionaries as well as missionaries from other organizations so that they have longevity. Apparently, if missionaries don't get this kind of training, often they get discouraged and end up leaving the field. They don't stay as long. So anyhow, the course trained us in culture, or at least gave us a beginning. We're still being trained in culture. some health things that we needed to be aware of. Language, even though there's 800 plus languages in Papua New Guinea, what they do is they have a trade language that's a very basic language. English has about 10,000 words. Tokpisin has what, 1,000?
Something like that.
So it's a very basic language,
general.
But it's kind of how everyone can talk to each other, because literally it's like being in North Bay and Astorville would have its own language, Corbeil would have its own language, and they're not the same language. It's not a different dialect. It's like a totally different language. So you can imagine trying to go to the market and communicate with someone from the next village and you don't speak the same language. It's incredible. So we learned the trade, or started to learn the trade language at this course, and then also to develop some skills that are needed in country. So I'll show you some pictures from this course. It was 3.5 months long. Started with the boys meeting other friends, other kids, missionary kids that were in the same boat. And so they're good buds. Very Papua New Guinean of them to be barefoot and holding hands. The men hold hands in Papua New Guinea if they're good friends. So next slide. All right, this was one of the things we had to play around with, was cooking over a fire, because most Papua New Guineans do not have electricity in their village, and they cook over a fire. So that was part of our training, and I could make a pretty mean loaf of bread in one of those pot ovens. It's quite amazing what you could do with those. So we had fun doing some of that training to prepare us for the next phase of POC, which was village living, where I'd be cooking over a fire for 5 weeks. So this was training at the course. And then the next slide. We also had a 3-day hike because most Papua New Guineans don't drive cars. They walk, and they walk long distances, and they think nothing of it. We felt so lazy in our mindset in comparison. They would walk kilometers and kilometers just to go visit a friend.
Also, to get into villages, you have to walk.
Right.
Often, because it's so remote.
Because it's so rugged, and there's often not roads. So part of the training was to work our way up to the 3-day hike, and then we did a 3-day hike. So this is us at the beginning of it. And then the next slide. This is the group we went with. It was a great group, and you really bond. Next slide. This is one of the houses we stayed in. This is a traditional lowlands house. In Papua New Guinea, you have two distinct regions. You have the lowlands, which is coastal, and it's hot because it's by the equator, so it's very warm. And so this is in the coastal area, and the houses are all on, it's called a leg house, because it's up on legs. And the purpose of that is to get wind to keep it cool so you can sleep at night. So almost all the houses in the lowlands are up on legs. So that's where we stayed the one night in the village. The ladies stayed in the house, and the men stayed in this little...
It's like a gazebo.
Like a gazebo. Next slide. This is the food they served us. We brought, our group brought rice and some corned beef. Tin beef is a real treat for them. And then they provided their typical diet is of sweet potato, called cow-cow there. And then greens is also very common to have. Greens in coconut milk. So that was our meal. And that's a traditional P&G type meal. Next slide. While we were in that village the night we stayed, we got a lot of rain, and the plan was to leave in the morning to go to the next village, but the water was too high to cross, and so we had to wait half a day for the waters to get low enough to cross. And generally, culturally, it's not appropriate for a man and woman to hold hands, but in this situation, they allowed us. So, Jeremy, it's actually more of a current than it looks like. It was interesting, so that was fun to get across. Next slide. Okay, so this is back at the school, kind of training school where we were. While we were in class, our kids were in class. They had school, or Stephen was in preschool because he was too young for school. But this is part of the language development is a crash course. So but they learned that the best way to learn a language is to be submersed in it. So we did take classes in school, but then they set our family up with this family to have a meal together. So the family was invited to where we were staying, and we shared a meal together and got to start practicing our talk pisin, which was terrifying, but it was good. So then from that, next slide, after that, we then went to their village and stayed and had meals at their house, and eventually we stayed a night at their village and developed that relationship, which is super important in P&G. It's about relationships. It's huge, so... And next slide. And then at the very end, well, not the very end, but they gave us one day during the course where we actually got to have fun. And so they called it Tropical Paradise Day, and then all the families packed up and went to the beach, and it was our first time snorkeling, and I think we'll always remember it. It was just phenomenal to be able to do that. And all you needed was a mask and a snorkel, and you were good to go. It was quite incredible and fun, and we felt like tourists for once. Next slide. Then we went to the village, and this is where we did village living for 5 weeks. And again, the point of this is so you can understand how the Papua New Guineans live, what their life is like, so you can sort of relate, because these are the people we're there to minister to. So this was our village house. This part down here was where we, and this is the door here. Inside, I cooked on the ground, on the mud floor, was our cooking fire and a table. Praise the Lord for a table. That's not usually, they don't normally have tables, but God knew my weakness. And when we got there, there was a table, which was a real blessing. My dishes were, I would do them out there, outside. And the top part is where, this is just an open, we call it a window, but there's no glass. It's just open for a breeze. And so this was where we all slept on the top floor. And next slide. So this is on the other side of the house. And this is the Wasp family's house. Wasp family means watch family, and they take their job very seriously to look out after us. And they were asked if they would be willing. Actually, people, Papua New Guineans often fight when they hear that they're being considered to take on missionaries to come stay in their village for 5 weeks. There's some, you know, stiff competition to try to get the missionaries in their place. And anyhow, they take it very seriously to be careful. They don't want anything happening to us, any sickness to come. They're very serious about it, and so they are literally our watch family. So this is where they would cook just behind this lady. There's a fire pit, and we would often share meals together there. And they do most of the cooking outside in the lowlands. And next slide. This is your bus. And on the road we were on, there was multiple villages, and this is the one and only bus they have, and it runs twice a day. So this is me in the blue... It's called a Mary blouse, getting on the bus. And it's an interesting experience, I can tell you that. It was very crammed and very tight. And they loaded more and more people on there still before we got to our destination. Next slide. Here's the boys. The The Papua New Guinean boys in the village were quick to start making them bows and arrows and getting them practicing on some of the cultural things that their other kids their age would be doing and know how to use. And next slide. There's Stephen with our pet chicken. They still have that chicken. We went there this past Christmas, and they still have that chicken because it's so precious to them, because it's part of, it was our pet, so they said, we'll never kill it. So they still have, and we called it Peeps, and at night, it didn't have its mama, and at night, it would find Jeremy. I don't know why, Jeremy was nice. It would climb up on his lap and tuck its head in Jeremy's armpit to roost for the night.
It was sure to put him out.
So, next slide. This is, it's interesting because families that have missionaries in their village, there was other villages that had missionaries down the road, and they all talk amongst each other, and they found out that I was supposed to learn a skill. And so they decided which skill they were going to teach me. And they informed me. And so this is making a bilum. And so this is what they're supposed to look like. This was one that was gifted to me before we came back here. This is how mine turned out. So I think they thought I was starting a new trend. It wasn't intentional. So needless to say, with the milk bags, you don't want me making the mat because it would be infant size. Next slide. And then this is our last day of village. There was a big crowd. We didn't take a lot of pictures because you're very leery of having a camera. It really sets you apart. And so we had to be careful how many pictures we took. And anyhow, but we did take some pictures. And they made this grass skirt for me. They dyed it all. And they made the head. Well, they bought the stuff for the head. Like, that's actually dog bones, which we couldn't bring because of custom issues in Australia. But
dog teeth,
yes. So they actually do have pig tests and stuff that they presented to the family, and it was just this big grand farewell, and they were actually weeping when we left. It was very touching. So next slide. And then that was pretty much the end of our training, and we moved up to Ukarumpa to start work, normal, what we went there for, working in the auto shop. And so this is Ukarumpa. And this is our house here in the black. So the auto shop is actually right over here. So Jeremy's nice and close to the auto shop. And then the high school is in behind here. Primary school's up over here. And then we have the training center. And we'll show you a little bit more of that at the next slide. This is our house. So for all of you who think we live in a mud hut, I'm guilty to say we do not. These are called what the Papua New Guineans would call a permanent house, because their homes have to be rebuilt about every 7 years, whereas our house was built in 1963-ish or something like that by some of the first missionaries in Ukarumpa, and it's lasted that whole time. So next slide. This is where we get our fruits and veggies. You can't buy them in the store unless you bought canned, which is like $5 a can of whatever veggies. So we get all our fresh produce here. And it's 3 mornings a week that it's open, from 6 till 8. So if you're not a morning person, too bad. There's lots of missionaries I learned that are not morning people, and I would be like, hello, and they'd be like, don't talk to me. Next slide. This is one of the only pictures I could get of the high school music building. I don't have much of the high school building at all, but this I was able to find. This is our view from our backyard, actually. Our backyard backs onto the high school field, and this is what I see and what I hear. They make amazing music. The quality is, the high school band is like what you would hear in a college or university level. It's wonderful. So Caleb's very much involved in band there, and that's the music building at the high school anyways. Next slide. This is part of the primary campus, covered basketball court, because we have a rainy season and no indoor auditoriums, so like no gym or anything. So they have their gym out here or down at a lower field. This is a play area, and then this is part of the kindergarten area, and chapel is down at the bottom. That's some of the primary campus. Next slide. This is our meeting house, and so this is where the high school meets for like... assemblies. Thank you, Caleb. It's also where we do church, or if the kids present a play, or we have a community hall meeting, all of it's done in this building, and it can hold quite a few people. Next slide. This is the training center that's built, and it's for the purpose of developing translation. Often a translator, when they go in the village, it might be a husband, wife, or two ladies that are translating, and they have to get the goal is to get Papua New Guinean people to join the team, because they can't translate the scripture without people who are experts in the language. So they get people from that language group that have a heart for translation and to get the Bible to the people, but then they need training. So we have a training center in Ukarumpa where teams come up for training to learn how to do Bible translation. Next slide. And we have the lovely, beautiful, pristine auto shop.
It's not beautiful, but it serves its purpose. As you can see, there's a fuel station out front, and which is well used by Papua New Guineans and Wycliffe members, anyone really. It's open to the public. And to the right, you can see some vehicles in that secure area. Those are our rental. That's our rental fleet. We have seven vehicles. Two or three vans, and then some pickup trucks and one SUV. Inside the compound there's a roll-away fence, a roll-away gate that we enter into the shop that has three hoists. And in behind that, there's an engineering, they call it engineering, where they do welding, metal fabrication. They have a machine shop. Actually, one of the translation teams, the gentleman that directs it, has a coffee roasting program that he's started up, and we built the coffee roaster. It's pretty cool, actually. So if you go to the next slide for me, please. Sometimes there are mishaps, and we live in the land of the unexpected. A gentleman's teenager was driving their SUV, and we had to do some repairs after that. Where I actually enjoyed doing some work that I'd done here in Canada, a little bit of detail work to get it up for the gentleman. Next slide, please. And as you saw on the video, I went down with this guy to fetch this pickup truck. He did not follow the scheduled maintenance for timing belt, and he has to put a cylinder head on, because a diesel engine has even closer tolerances. Next one, please. Sometimes you have to get into your work. I didn't actually break that window. That was the heat that broke that, apparently. But I did lock the keys inside. So I had to go in to try to get it. This one actually needs an engine rebuild. Next slide. And I got to gain some very interesting knowledge. I hadn't really done transmission work before this. The first one I did was rather trying on a 3-ton Toyota. And it works fine, but it was kind of a scary time in between putting it together. This one went seamless, and the people were very happy with it. It had no fourth gear. And consequently, we service their fleet. They're a government agency, somewhat like the natural resources, a branch of natural resources here. We don't just work on people's vehicles outside. We work on lots of missionary vehicles. I have lots of stories of, it's neat hearing the translator's stories. And I especially have a heart to bless them. And one particular gentleman who recently lost his wife. He works part-time. He comes up for 3 months every year, and we try to get his vehicle ready so he can get in and go. And it's a very rough road in, so his vehicle is beat up really badly. But that's one of the experiences that I get. And, you know, just to converse and talk to him, and you know, that during the time that his wife had cancer, I could talk with him about that. I enjoy that. What's the next one, please? And these are the guys I get to work with. There's lots of opportunity to have difficult people to work with, and I have touched with them, but these guys, I love working with them. They're gentle. They want to do the job well, and they're interested in learning new things. They don't specialize in a lot of electric or electronic diagnosis or repair, so they like to hear all these things and AC and that type of thing. So I get to work with them. Sometimes we like to think of Canada. We don't get out a whole lot, and so when we see stuff like this, we have to point it out. So our boys loved seeing this. Camp Oshpakoon. Okay, next one. And this brings us into Jesus films. I had a little story that I wanted to tell you about it. It was a really neat adventure, but I think we're going to run out of time, so I can't. I have a hard time. I like painting the Mona Lisa, and
sometimes give
yeah, it's. So we went into a village that had recently found gold in their gardens. The children were literally working in their garden because that's how they eat. That's their food. And they found gold nuggets. So this village was very rich, very quick, and they're very protective of their gold as well. When we went in there, there were holes all over the hillsides, and people moved their houses on top of their gold mine so that no one, because people were going in and stealing their gold and fights and whatever. So we came in and
to do a Jesus film.
We had to walk in about a kilometer, lots of hills, carrying the heavy equipment. Well, it felt heavy after a kilometer. And we sat outside the village waiting for them to okay us to come in. They looked like, who are you guys? But when they found out that we were there to show Jesus film, they let us in. So there was a pastor of a Lutheran church there that said, you see these drunk guys here, they are going to disrupt your film showing. So you need to come in into our compound, our fenced area. So we went in there and showed the film, and there was a large group. We typically get about 200 people for every Jesus film, and we talk about Audi Bibles. I wish I forgot it. Anyways, I wish I brought it. But this is the Agarabi Bible, and it was one of those Bibles that was that had no language written down. So they learned the language, and they made a New Testament, and were distributing them. So when we showed this picture, there was not a sound from this group. They came in, they were sitting just outside this dilapidated fence that wouldn't have done anything if they wanted to come in. But later when we were talking to the pastor, he said, I was amazed how they were dumb. They couldn't say a word. So that there's impact to that, and knowing that they're not ever going to see a movie in their language. So like it hits the mark. And those are some of the things that are exciting about being involved with Wycliffe, because we're getting the Bible that's meant for this people into their hands, and the gospel hitting the mark that it was intended for. So that's, and then you've seen this picture before. Go ahead. Literacy method. So, like I said, they didn't have their language in any written form, and so they don't know how to read it. They may know how to read Tok Pisin, which would be helpful, or English, And then they can make out the words and the sounds. And so what we do is we get the Audi Bible that has the Bible verse by verse on it, exactly the way it is in the Bible. And they open it up, it plays, and they can read line by line exactly what they're hearing. And that way they can learn how to read. There's another method. There's a Bible app for cell phones. And there's in Papua New Guinea, cell phones, they know more about cell phones than I do, because it's the only form of communication that they can come in. They don't really have a lot of landlines, and they're not, they're not very predictable. So everyone has a cell phone, and so these apps are getting traded around, and they have the sound of the Bible or the recorded Bible being, you can hear it, and then verse by verse is highlighted so that they can read it all right on their phone. So that's some of the stuff I want to get involved with, because it's effective. Here's another thing. You can't really see it, but I'm holding this little thing up here. We have files of the Jesus film. We have songs, all the songs that are on the Audi Bible, and the Bible itself, right from Matthew, because it's the New Testament. They want to work, that's another thing, they want to work on the Old Testament so they have the complete Bible. So I'm showing some kids the Jesus film there, and they're really interested in that. This is my favorite picture of our whole time there. We didn't actually show in this village, but this is kind of the setting that you come into. And this is in the mountains. I climbed up like this, and then this valley just came out in front of us. And then I thought we were showing up on top, and they said, "You see that smoke down in there? That's where we're going." So we zigzagged down, and I have some other pictures that look like a cattle trail. It wasn't actually that bad. I was just driving over grass, but there aren't vehicles that go in there. But you can see the type of... they have roundhouses there. I'm sure you've seen them in Africa. They have some more modern type structures. But that's what we stayed in, which is another story I'd tell you, but I'm over here. So, and again, people gathering to learn more about the Bible, and people getting a Bible or Audi Bible.
Okay. And just with the Jesus film, what happened in the language group he's working in called Agarabi, the person that was doing the translation, I don't know, do you know how many years it took him? Was it almost 20? That's kind of a...
There were three different translation groups.
Okay. But what happened is the translation was finished. It was printed. They did a big dedication, and about 30 sold, but some of them missionaries bought because they can go home and show their churches a Bible from another language group. So, and then the translator that did that work, he spent all those years, and it's a very discouraging time for translators. It's very hard work, and it can be very, there's a lot of opposition.
Especially at the end
when it's getting close to having the final copy. And so they just ended up packing up after the dedication, and he went back to the States and became a pastor. And so they had all these Bibles, and nobody really knew about them in the language group. So Jeremy came along, and they were like, "Can you go out and show the Jesus film?" And so really, it's the first time people even find out they have a Bible in their language. It's really quite incredible. It's just, imagine your life without an English Bible. Like, it's just, yeah,
over,
so.
There's over 280 now.
So, yeah, when Jeremy was there, they distributed over 280. So it's a real blessing. Okay, so I'll do this real quick. So there's dry season in Ukurempa, and then there's mud season. So this is the kids just having fun in the mud, and they were muddy a lot. It was to my great stress, trying to keep my house clean. All right, next slide. This is Stephen's kindergarten class, just to give you an idea of what, you know, they have a mixed class. There's actually seven countries represented in Stephen's class. Some are from El Salvador and all over Holland, Sweden, all over the place. And, of course, one Canadian, Stephen, and Papua New Guinean as well. Next slide. Some of the food. This, our neighbor's Argentinian, from Argentina, and she gave these, and I can't remember the name. Caleb, do you remember the name? No. So they were yummy, really yummy. She gave this as a gift, and the boys couldn't wait to eat it. Next slide. Daniel was baptized while we were there, which was really precious. So that's a special thing. Next slide. An ice cream truck. This happened, I can only remember really once that it happened, but some of the teens were trying to make money, and so they were trying to figure out how to do it. And they decided to put a stereo in the window and drive around selling kids ice cream. I guess it wasn't successful because it didn't continue on after that day. Next slide. And then this is a class trip that Stephen got to go to at the Wycliffe Aviation. We have an aviation field with five planes and two helicopters where they're going steady. We're hearing planes all the time going because there's so many remote locations that there's actually more airstrips in PNG than there are roads because it's so rugged. So anyhow, he got to do a class tour of that. Next slide. Good. Perfect. Does anybody have any questions? Should I pass the mic around for that or what? I don't know. Just shout it out.
David.
Yes.
They're different mosquitoes than Northern Ontario mosquitoes. I don't know what it is about what they do there.
We call it the cloaking syndrome. I don't know if you're Star Trek fans, but they just disappear. They are, I don't know, they disappear when you try to catch them.
I can grab them in midair, but they're like, and then they disappear.
Very frustrating at night when you're trying to sleep.
But there's not as many as around here.
Yeah, and up where we live in the highlands, because it's colder, we don't have the malaria and the dengue and chikungunya, generally. Usually. Except the one that bit me.
Do you have termites or red ants?
There are termites. They're usually down in the lower area, and they have to do regular spraying. Where we did our training, they were lax on that, and they had to do a lot of rebuilding because it destroyed a lot of the building.
And red ants, I don't know about red ants.
We have
Daniel, fire ants.
What kind of ants do they have?
Big red ones, and they bite really hard.
Yeah, there is an ant called a bull ant that bites you when you. It's not nice.
Daniel's our insect expert, but he's a little shy tonight.
He eats them too. Yeah.
Do you have timber for your houses that would go across the floor that you can make right there?
They have beautiful timber in Papua New Guinea, and in fact, our kitchen was made out of rosewood, and the floors are all, they look like hardwood floors. But that's what they have. Just like here, all they had was wood. And now when we see wood floors or, you know, we have wood accent walls. But that's what they have to build.
Because they don't have drywall or anything like that in country. So most of our house is actually wood. Leah?
Yes, that's something else that they have. Ukurumpa is a center, and a lot of things happen in there, and we're there to support Bible translation, but there's a lot of other things that are going on that we're supporting as well. One of them is audio recordings. For example, I was showing you the Audi Bible that I don't have here. But the Jesus film, they do dubbing. So
what they do is they first translate the Bible, and then shortly generally, if they can, if they have enough staff or whatever, then they would dub it to the audio, like they would have people from the village reading and getting it on an audio Bible, and also for the Jesus film. But it, if they have enough people to do that, not all the languages that have a Bible necessarily have the Jesus film yet, just because of staff issues, shortages. Yes? In Tok-Pisin?
Tok-Pisin?
Oh.
Well, oh,
we won't have time, Caleb. Caleb, you can talk long Tok-Pisin. Tok-Pisin belong you and good plethru.
Yeah.
Okay. Caleb's Tok-Pisin, he took it in school for 1 year, and his teacher actually approached me afterwards and said, "How long have you been in country?" And we said, "About 6 months." And she said, "His Tok-Pisin is just amazing. He actually got 100% in it, which is very rare, but he's very linguistically gifted."
I had people coming from the village regularly, and my contact guy from Agarabi, he would come in and talk to me, and I'd kind of chop up the language, and Caleb would say a few things, and he'd point to him. Now, Caleb, he knows.
He knows how to talk. They really liked it.
He was
our help in village when we were first learning the language, because we struggled through these suppers trying to talk to this village family, and it was all awkward. And one day, finally, Caleb, I guess he had heard us hack up the language bad enough that he just finally just stepped in and just tried to say what we were saying to them, and they just lit up, and they're like, "His Tok-Pisin is very good."
Daniel's another one that, and I wish the two of them could, because they do this little play that
they learned of Tok-Pisin.
In
we don't
Guinea,
know
they,
a slang version.
Yeah,
that
they
the
talk
kids
back
use.
And forth with hisses and little slang things, and he sounds just like the Papua New Guinean boys.
Yeah,
Daniel, he's
that's
like
good. Because they hit, a lot of our the kids in our neighborhood area are Papua New Guinean boys, and they play together all the time, and they usually play in Tok-Pisin. Although the boys do go to Ukurumpa school and they are taught in English, they can speak it, they tend to play in Tok-Pisin. So, did you have a question, Lois? No. Okay, I thought I saw your hand up. Okay.
That's it.
Sounds like.
Yes, empanadas. So, they're. Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah.
I remember seeing them, and they are good.
They are wonderful. Any other questions? Jonathan? Actually, that's a good question. Do they play in the mud a lot? No, the Papua New Guineans do not play in the mud a lot. And we were at the beach one time, and the kids found a mud hole, literally jumping in the mud and just covering themselves and loving it. And all the Papua New Guineans just stood there giggling and laughing at them. But they wouldn't get close. And Jeremy and I, all we can do is try to figure it out, because there's so much different in the culture that you're just always trying to figure out how they see things. But my conclusion is that they don't have running water in their house. So their goal is when they bathe, they get clean, and then they try to stay clean until the next bathing. Whereas our kids think it's great fun to play in mud. So, but that generally you will not see them in mud. They try to stay clean. Is that good? All right, I guess that's it. Okay, we are done. Okay, Jeremy's going to do a song. It's a short one, and Caleb's going to sing with him. I'm going to duck out because I'm just not there yet with public singing. Do you want to do this?
By the way, I missed my guitar. We have a guitar over there, and I'm very thankful for it, but it's not a Yamaha.
Making me all same. Belong you.
And this is and this next part is the same song in
God Soup,
which is the people that we live close by to. So it goes like this.
I just wanted to mention that that song is one that, actually, I don't know because we never sang that in our church, but the auto shop does devotions each day. And so Jeremy used to play in the auto shop and sing with the men, and the men taught him their talk, their language. So that's how he knows that song.
That was my favorite song because it is make me like you. I want your image to be in me.
Thank you, Jeremy.